Do you have a support group or a mastermind or a team of people to help you with best practices to combat staffing challenges that you're having?
Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
eLaborate Topics podcast, your go-to podcast for medical lab professionals to give you tips and tools to help you to excel in your laboratory journey. And I'm Lona Small, and with my co-host, Tywana Wilson and Stephanie Whitehead. And we are so excited to have Michael Barron, a visionary in laboratory operation. He's joining us to help us to unravel the staffing challenges in the medical lab. And with my awesome co-host, we'll explore with Michael some of the innovative strategies and some of his collaborative efforts that he's doing to help to reshape the landscape of lab staffing. So whether you are a seasoned lab professional or you're just curious about what we are doing behind the scenes, this conversation is going to be really fascinating. So let's get started. Welcome, Michael, to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. So I'm going to give a quick bio of Michael. Michael Barron is the Executive Director of Clinical Lab Operations at Wisconsin Diagnostic Laboratory. Mike brings 32 years of experience supporting lab teams towards achieving success. He is a retired Lieutenant Colonel from the U.S. Army as an active and reserve forces officer, leading soldiers in various roles, part-time work as a college instructor and a personal trainer, a husband of 35 years, father of four, and grandfather of six grandkids. He is an ultramarathon runner, fisherman, outdoorsman, and enjoys home remodeling. I just say, wow, just listening to that. I think this is what you call work-life integration, or living your life to the fullest. Michael, thank you so much for coming to share with us.
Oh, sure. Yep. And right off the press, at number 7 on the way.
Awesome. I love when people mix the fun stuff with their work. And that's really what I think give us full joy when we can do that full life integration. I love that. So yep. You have another one coming. Awesome. I have 4. We're going to jump in because we have a lot of questions between all of us. Hopefully, we'll get it done within this time, but we're going to jump right in. So my first question to Michael is, first, help us by describing some of the specific staffing challenges that you are facing at Wisconsin Diagnostic Lab and some of your approaches to address. So please share with us.
Yeah, sure. And we're probably not unique to other clinical labs out there having staffing challenges, especially with the second and third shift staffing. We're seeing a rapid turnover in staffing. We're seeing younger adults spending less time at the lab. They're rotating more quickly. Part of the solution to that was we are not able to find certified techs out of school. The programs are diminishing. There's fewer programs. There's fewer certified techs available. My solution was to create my own non-certified tech program, as I call it, where we actually hire in college degree folks, generally biology, chemistry, or related type degrees that meet the CLE 88 requirements for working in the lab. So this allows us to put them to work. What we do is we put them through the same competency training that we do with other techs. But what we also do is we give them classroom instruction on the clinical lab. They generally have a pretty good basis in the sciences and physiology and around the clinical laboratory, but they don't have that specific educational training in the clinical lab. So that's why I hired a trainer. Carolyn Hager is my trainer here, and she puts them through the ringer as far as the clinical lab. She's modified the time and amount of training during the week to fit the scheduling of the staffing, because we're finding staffing are coming in. Initially, we started, we had a whole group come in at one time, and now we're coming as we hire. So it's more challenging, but she's training them an hour or 2 hours a day, two or three times a week. And I said it varies. Our primary focus has been in the core lab around chemistry and hematology. And the ultimate goal there is when they have that classroom instruction a year on the job, now they're eligible for ACP certification. And we're certifying them on a specific category, which in this case is chemistry and hematology. We have a similar program down in microbiology, and the microbiology has hired a trainer and is doing the same approach, but maybe not as organized as what I have in the core lab, but they're getting that program established, as well as my manager down in histology is creating a histology program as well, bring them in the same thing as the college CLIA requirements and training them on the job to certify either for the histotechnician certification or the HTL, the histotech laboratorian certification as well. Also, part of this is I've worked with the state of Wisconsin to create a lab, clinical lab apprenticeship program. So working with workforce development with the state of Wisconsin, which allowed me to work with a local university. So the training that they're getting in the classroom is coming through the university as opposed to on the lab. What this allows though is other laboratories throughout the state of Wisconsin to enter this program, working an agreement with the state of Wisconsin workforce development and the local university. The university provides the training, they do on-job instruction, get their competency from working in the lab, and then gain a certification over a year. So we started that program as well here as the first in the state of Wisconsin, but it opens it up the door for others because a lot of labs cannot afford to hire a trainer in like we have. There's pros and cons either way. The trainer on site gives us more flexibility when we can train them where the instruction is. If you're doing an apprenticeship program, you're at the mercy of the college course when they're doing the education. Then some of the concerns of the new folks in the program is sometimes the training doesn't correlate with what they're doing at the bench. It's very difficult to do, especially when you got people coming at different times. But we're doing our best to try to coordinate it, what they're doing on the bench, what they're doing in the classroom. But at the end of the year, they received all the competency training on the bench as well as in the classroom. And we've been very successful in certifying the staff. I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but we've had just about all of our folks going through this program have become certified when they took the examination, the ACP certification examination.
Are they doing certain hours work and certain hours of classroom daily, or you have a day out of the week that they're doing the classroom?
And in the beginning it was more structured because we had a whole group of folks coming through and we had certain times a day, several times during the week. Now, since we're getting non-certified techs in at different times based on the hiring, Carolyn has been shifting that around a bit, but we work with the managers of each department. And the unique thing about this versus is not necessarily unique, but we're paying them while they're going through the classroom instruction. So they're getting paid as a non-certified tech. Once they become certified, we give a pretty significant salary increase to be a clinical lab scientist. So there's a lot of motivation for them to get through the program. We're training, we're paying them for the full 40-hour work week. So they're getting a salary that's able to support them. And when they achieve that certification, then we bump them up pretty significantly. It's a win for everybody. We get dedicated staff for training them according to our laboratory instruments and procedures and practices. But at the end of it, we have a fully trained, certified employee that our hope is that they stick with us for years for our commitment to them, which time will tell how successful that is.
Pretty awesome, Mike. I'm excited to hear about all of the things that you all are doing with the apprenticeship program, and even more excited that you are having such a success rate of your people going through to certification. I know in many of our labs here, we are doing similar work with the uncertified techs, but not necessarily with the final goal of the certification. And as one of those that are sitting on the ASCP Workforce Steering Committee, alternate pathways certification. I'm happy to hear about your work that you are doing.
Yep. And the expectation is that they become certified and we give them a window of time. If they don't achieve that certification, which we're making it 24 months, then we will either separate or give them a laboratory role where they're certain, where they're eligible, probably like a medical lab assistant, which is another program we're creating as a medical lab assistant, similar type program. Bring them in, train them, give them the classroom instruction, train them on the job, and then become lab assistants is another alternative to bringing in a certified tech. We determine that medical lab assistants can do a large majority of the clinical lab work, and then it frees up the clinical lab technician to truly do the work that's required of that certification. So that's something we haven't rolled out the ground yet. We're still working on job descriptions and getting it through compensation, but that'll be rolled out very soon. I think that'll be a good alternative, especially for labs in the rural areas that can't find certified techs, because you can work with high school graduate folks, get them. And our ultimate goal there too is to get the ACP certification and as a, or EA, the other program, I think it's EST certified as well, and is a medical lab assistant.
Nice.
So the idea is that we're achieving the same level of technical skills and doing it ourselves, more so than relying on the universities to produce certified tech, which is far between.
Yeah, that's awesome. We definitely need the work that you're doing. So thank you for doing that. And thinking about, as you were talking, your collaborative initiative with the state and with the universities is really quite innovative, because I think a lot of labs are working in a silo, or they're trying to train the staff as much as they can on site, but not necessarily rolling it out to a state level. Could you talk to us a little bit about what inspired the apprenticeship and this initiative and how that idea came to be? How it came to be and how did you structure the functions of it?
So initially started out working with the local university here, Milwaukee Area Technical College, which they have an MLT program, which provides the classroom instruction. What I initially tried to do in the Milwaukee area was to have a program where we would work with other laboratories and put together a group of laboratorians or candidates or non-certified techs candidates that would get classroom instruction through MLT, through their MLT training program. These would be college degree folks, just like I described before, meet CLE 88 requirements, get the classroom instruction through MLT or through the MLT program they had there, but do it aside, like a separate program through the college. And we didn't have enough folks to support a type of program. So I tried to work with other labs in the area. We're starting to make some progress in getting towards that, but then the college didn't have enough instructors to support the program. So it lied for a period of time. And then the MATC recognized the apprentice program, said, hey, maybe we can work through that, and contacted the workforce development in the state and initiated that process. So I started working with the state of Wisconsin, working through MAKC. And then through the state of Wisconsin, we created an apprenticeship contract and established the program from the ground zero. So we created the program. So now other labs can use that same contract and the same approach or program. They can modify it a bit depending on their needs. Now the program is established and other labs can utilize it. And besides that, what I've also been working is at the high school level, been working with the Department of Public Instruction in the state of Wisconsin. We're actually working to create programs, the lab assistant program and a phlebotomy program at the high school level through a high school level apprenticeship program. So juniors and seniors in the high school can work at their high school, get into these programs, work with the local lab. So my goal is, we don't have it, we're just working out initially here, but in the next school year, hopefully have this program available to different high schools throughout the state, working through the director of the Department of Public Instruction. And I'm getting some attention from some of the local universities as well, because they like to have these types of students coming to their program as well and for their development from there. So they can go on further on the college, while at the same time going into the lab and work in the lab and gain money, but also keep furthering their education at the college level. So we're trying to reach out. We actually re-invited ourselves. We're invited to the Wisconsin State Counselor Conference and presented their opportunities in this health field as well to try to get the word out. So that's been another success that we've had. So now we've reached out to a lot of counselors throughout the state and gaining the awareness of the profession, which is, I think, largely not recognized by a lot of high school students. We're trying to hit it early on and hit it from the college level as well as trying to get them interested in the high school level.
As a career ambassador, I think we all know that representation matters. And the earlier that we can introduce individuals, particularly students and students with an interest in STEM, to our profession, the better we have at a shot of them actually going into our profession. It sounds like you've created a structure where they'll definitely be successful in your laboratory. And I wonder, Tywana mentioned that she's on the ASCP workforce, and the ASCP working with the CLMA now has local chapters. And one of the great things about the local chapters is individuals from particular areas can come together on the particular needs of the laboratory community in that area. And so I'm in Lower Texas, and we certainly have our own challenges with half of the cytology schools being in Northern Texas and not being able to get many cytology students down here, and et cetera. So I wonder, what are some of the common factors that you found in terms of staffing challenges that really led you this way and became the genesis for you creating this initiative?
Yeah, I think just having the number of qualified candidates coming in our door. So we would post open positions, and some of the candidates we had, they could have a certification, but they weren't quite the right fit for our laboratory. We're a high volume, high complexity laboratory. We're like, hey, we got a certified candidate, but they weren't necessarily the best fit. Actually, I started in the lab 32 years ago in a program like this as well. So what I recognize is that a lot of these high school graduates, especially with biology chemistry degrees, don't really know what they want to do, but they're highly motivated, very smart people. So what it opened the door was to really, truly recruit for the best candidate. We would get them the training on the job experience to make them a good tech and get them into a career. And we had a lot of candidates to choose from. So we put an ad on it. But before I started, I put a blind ad to see how much interest we got. And instead of having possibly one certified tech apply to a role, we had 15, 20 applying. So we could interview 15, 20 candidates and pick best candidate for the role. So that it really increased, I think, the level of candidates that we're seeing and then the success rate at staying, which I guess I can't say that for sure yet, but I think we're going to have a lot longer longevity putting the focus on these candidates and developing them into this career and giving them an avenue to their career grow.
I am going to jump into the collaborative aspect of the initiative that you have had. I know that we have pulled a lot of lab leaders across Wisconsin and across the country together to come up with some really innovative ways to solve some of these challenges that you're having. So just generally tell us about the collaborative, like what inspired you to do it, and what are some of the things that you're finding from other lab leaders?
Yeah, so I created what's called the WDL Education Collaborative. So it's a WebEx that I host once a month, and we bring in different speakers throughout the country talking about staffing challenges they have in the clinical lab and some of the approaches that they have tried. Because I actually spoke at the ACC, I spoke on different platforms about it, and I started getting a lot of folks coming up to me and asking me about it, what we were doing. I actually got published in a few articles that gained, for example, Cap Today article that I started getting people reaching out to me. And I said, I'd like to be able to share this, and I think there's other great ideas out there. So what this collaborative does is opens the door for anybody that's from the clinical lab looking at all possible solutions. And I help recognize the solutions that I've created may not be the right size or may fit all different laboratories, especially in the rural labs. They have a lot more challenges than we do. I talked about my non-cert program, my partners program, the things that I was doing on the first collaborative, which I had a good showing. And then it created more interest, and we've been inviting people through LinkedIn, trying to get some exposure. I've now have 8 different speakers that have spoke over the last year, different approaches. First one being Duke University, Laurelyn Younger spoke about her training program, similar to what we're doing. One thing we found, discovered that not unique to us, but everybody's creating this curriculum from scratch on their own and doing the classroom instruction. So there's some definite opportunity there. And I've been talking to the University of Illinois Chicago, the SHIELD folks, about creating a depository of some of this curriculum that we could share through the clinical lab community, so not everybody's creating it from scratch. So that's some of the ideas that would come out. We heard from Sablocki VA Medical Center from Patricia Boyer, who talked about her NACLS program and their approach to it, making it more of a recognized standard around education. Because ours is not NACLS accredited, it's truly just us putting this curriculum together and training the folks on site. The NACLS program has a lot of success, but may not be the best for everybody, but somebody might have the ability to put a NACLS program together. Jim Payne, I think you know him. He's out in New York, that created a high school program and has been very successful with that. In fact, that's what kind of prompted me to start that with the Department of Public Instruction here at Wisconsin, was motivated by Jim Payne and things that he's done. The lab assistant program, Lisa Wiley had put together a program. And we had Dr. Elizabeth Margolski, I probably ruined her name there, but she created a pediatric phlebotomy program. So there's been Rihanna Clifton is the one that we worked with SHIELD out of the University of Illinois, that they're developing a clinical lab program. They initially started out doing COVID testing and some funding through that, but now they're shifting gears and actually creating training programs for folks to get into the clinical lab, initially more on molecular, but other specialties as well. So we're partnering a little bit, being close together and trying to see how we can partner more. Our focus is more heme, chem, and micro. They have more molecular areas that we don't necessarily have, so we can be more powerful with a team of folks to hit this staffing shortage in the clinical lab.
Michael, this is awesome that so many labs are coming together as part of this collaborative. What notable changes in staffing approaches have you observed since you all started introducing this initiative to the field?
Here at WDL, I can certainly tell you that second shift would have been very difficult to staff. We would have probably been going through the route what a lot of labs are doing, is going to travelers and filling holes, which is very expensive and short-lived. In this case here, my second shift in the core lab is pretty much non-certified techs that are getting certified, filling the ranks in that lab, and it's been very successful. They've been performing extremely well. But initially, the regular techs were concerned about these folks coming in and the amount of training they had to do, but I think they're proving themselves well in the lab. So we're meeting the high quality standards that we are striving for and filling the ranks with the staff. And that's what I've been hearing from these other programs, is they're maintaining their staffing in the lab at a level that they feel comfortable with. I think a lot of labs are struggling with staffing and just living day to day with the staff they have. They're not able to grow and develop the lab like you would like to, just more maintaining and sustaining as opposed to really thriving. And that's where we've been. We've been truly a thriving laboratory and developing a lot of systems and programs. Recently become an ISO 15189 accredited laboratory this year. So we're improving every day, and this program kind of falls in alignment with that.
That's all fantastic. I think sometimes it's important for us to take our fate into our own hands, right? And stop trying to do the same things that maybe not working and trying something different. And this is definitely an example of that. I wanted to ask you, how has the broader professional, you mentioned a couple of different other organizations and schools that you were working with, so the broader professional or industry communities either supported you or influenced your initiative?
Yeah, everybody I've spoken to has been excited about the support. The Department of Public Instruction was just so happy to have a partner. Another organization that we're partnering with is HOSA. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. They develop health professionals, and it's a national-wide organization. We're working with this, the host in the state of Wisconsin and becoming a sponsor. So they didn't have a lot of representation around the clinical lab. So here we are, a good partner, clinical lab that can partner with them. And because a lot of the focus is on doctors and nursing, but not all healthcare students or students in the healthcare or sciences want to go into those roles, or maybe not the best fit for them. We find lab people are more introverted in nature, so a clinical lab is a better fit for them. So we provide that avenue. So that's been really good. The state of Wisconsin was really excited about creating an apprenticeship program. They've been looking at creating more apprentice programs around the professional level in the sciences, which is very good. In fact, we even caught the attention of the First Lady at a Chicago apprenticeship program where we recognized WDL. We did their COVID testing when they had some of them coming into the state of Wisconsin, but she was excited about having an apprenticeship program related to all in the sciences. I think people recognize the need for sciences. I'm finding universities are struggling with attracting students in the sciences because it's a harder profession to get into. So I think giving them the clinical lab and knowing how it impacts or helps patients, we can hopefully attract more people into the science field. A lot of the universities have been happy about these programs, and they can use it as a selling point to give these students profession to go into a career of choice. So we actually have much insight into.
Awesome. It seems as if you're really getting a lot of good attention, and even with our professional association, then now you're saying the First Lady and a lot of people are willing to support this. So sometimes we just simply say, take it into our hand and people see what we're doing and we'll get support along the way. Just looking into the future, I know the collaborative is growing and different people are referring others. I was referred by Lisa to come and speak, and I told you I'd try to get people who are working on staffing initiative to come and share. You're getting together to share ideas, share best practice, and trying to implement it in different labs across the country. That is amazing. And so looking into the future, what would you see as your overarching vision for the collaborative and the influence on the lab staffing in general? What future plan do you have for?
Yeah, I don't know if plans, it's more of a dream or a vision to have this lead to a much larger network of clinical lab professionals throughout the country sharing their ideas and ultimately leading to a conference, which could be in person or could be virtual as well, but to bring together a group of folks with these different approaches and presenting to others more so in person or virtually. So it's a more focused event as opposed to once a month or whatnot. But bringing a group of professionals together, truly develop that network in person, which I think will strengthen the resolve that we have with this different approaches and collaborative. But my ultimate goal is someday to lead to a conference where we can call it the Education Collaborative Conference throughout the country. I have it in a central location and bring a group together and have different speakers present the solutions or things or ideas that they have done. Because I've been doing some speaking. I'm speaking in HOSA. I spoke at ACC, but it's got to be a different platform, more focused on addressing the staffing challenges in the clinical lab.
Michael, this is awesome news. So when you have the conference, make sure that you keep us posted.
No, sure. Chip, I just got to get the following to actually put together enough folks to actually get it off the ground. So you can help me spread the word. And that's ultimately what I think we all do. It actually getting spread more word of mouth is the biggest way we've been establishing a collaborative. LinkedIn is a kind of a good resource, but really live professionals talking to live professionals, inviting others. And that's what we encourage. We've not turned anybody down. And there's no money involved. We're not asking for anything. It's truly just to share information. I think some people are concerned about joining or participating because they think We're out to sell stuff. We really are. We're trying to sell good ideas and hopefully solutions for your lab. And I recognize that every lab is the same, and you can't do exactly what I did, but you might be able to do some form of it or to make it work differently for you. And if that works, we'd like to hear about it as well, because that may be a good solution for some other labs.
And you mentioned about participating. I think that was right on time for the question that I had for you, is how can people actively participate and contribute to this collaborative initiative? There could be some people out there that want to contribute financially, so don't block any blessings for somebody who might want to contribute in that way. However, there are others that will contribute with their time and talent. How can people participate that do have that motivation and desire after hearing your work?
Yeah, no, they can reach out to me through our shared email address. It's WDL Education Collaborative at WisconsinDiagnostic.com. I know that's a mouthful, but WDL Education Collaborative at WisconsinDiagnostic.com. And just send me a message. Say, hey, Mike Barron, I'm willing to participate. We'll be more than happy to send you the meeting links. And we've also been sharing the compilation of information that we received from all the different speakers. We do that every so often. Everybody that's participating will compile it and send it out as an email, so you can have the resources that we have and also in the contact information of the folks that spoke as well. So if you want to reach out to them personally, and the people I've been able to speak of, I'm more than happy to provide resources or have people reach out to them.
Awesome. So listening audience, you heard what Mike said. We'll have the email in our show notes. So make sure you get and stay connected with him so that you can get on the monthly list, or you can contribute with your time, talent, or treasure, whichever one you feel comfortable doing. But Mike and his team has an awesome initiative. And I think understanding best practices as it relates to staffing, what other people are doing, it's always great to get together in a room, whether it's virtually or physically, to discuss best practices. So I'm excited for your future conference. They say make it plain. So we are putting it out in the atmosphere that it will be soon.
Yep. No, I greatly appreciate that. Yeah, we definitely are looking for speakers all the time. I get a little stressed sometimes. Oh, not everybody really speaking, and somebody comes out of the woodwork. Yeah, we can throw up some more, because there's a lot of people that have a lot of great ideas out there, and I'm not the problem solver for all, and I know I don't have all the solutions. And what I worked for me may not work for you, but your solutions may work for others. And really looking for folks that are from the more rural areas. Like, we have a lot of rural areas up in Wisconsin that are even more challenged than we are in what they're doing. Because I think that would help a large audience of people that are really struggling, more so than me being in a metropolitan area.
That was a mouthful in itself. So everybody heard it. Mike said what he said. Works for me may not work for you, but it's all about getting everybody in the room and talking about the solutions and gaining what you can gain to help your individual laboratories. I love to hear it, and I love to hear these great success stories on our podcast so our listeners can understand what is possible if they collaborate, network, which is what we constantly are talking about and constantly moving people towards, and try to create a better life for all of our colleagues on and off the bench. So as we wrap up, any closing words or words of advice or things you want to leave our listeners with as we close out, Mike?
I've run across some real closed mind to the different approaches and ideas. We're in a different world now, and we're not able to recruit like we used to. So you might have to look at these alternative approaches to staff your lab. I've come across some leaders that said, nope, I can't do it. No way. And I'm like, where are you at right now? We're really struggling. These are approaches that I've proven, and over time, I'm sure I'll prove them to be very successful, and they'll meet your needs of the lab. And like you said, I had to take the matters in my own hand and create the staffing that we need in order to keep this lab successful and grow. And we're an ISO 51518 certified lab. And that's a rare entity, and it's a high level of quality that we've achieved with these different programs and approaches, and they align very well. Don't discount it, is my final words. There are alternatives to finding qualified staff in your lab. You may have to put more effort into it, but you're shaping these folks into a career that I think the idea is that they'll stick with you longer than the typical candidate that you come across.
Mike, myself and my co-host and all of our listeners, we greatly appreciate and thank you for coming on to this episode today and sharing your story and sharing all of the things that you have personally done for our profession. Hats off to you for everything that you're doing to create a more dedicated workforce for Wisconsin and making sure that you and your hospital systems in that area can continue to care for the patients and serve the clinicians and doctors in that area, which is so important. We hope our listeners gained a little bit of inspiration from this story and go back in your areas and either do the same or do something similar or do something different. But at least you walk away wanting to do something. Certainly reach out to Mike if you need advice or would like to collaborate or would like to get in a think tank with him and try to come up with some innovative ideas. This is a very innovative mind for our laboratory profession and somebody you definitely want to take the opportunity to network and connect with. The Elaborate Topics podcast has over 180 episodes listened to in over 100 countries. Oh. We are happy that listeners continue to follow us on our journey and tune in every week to these inspiring stories. If you'd like to connect with us, please reach out to us on our LinkedIn group, comment on this episode, share it out, and let us know what you think and what you're doing in your areas. We love bringing you these topics. Continue to connect with us and network with us. And until next week, please, all of you have a great day.
Yeah. Great. Thank you again.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com.